ducked my head, rubbing the heel of my hand into an aching spot on my chest. My eyes flitted up, and I saw that Carter was doing the exact same thing. I knew at that moment. I knew he felt whatever I felt. It may not have been what was supposed to happen, but how could we deny it now? What if Maxon did choose me? Did I have to say yes? What if I was stuck here married to one man while watching the person I truly wanted walking around my home every day? No, I would not do this to myself. Abandoning every ladylike notion in my head, I darted to the door, shutting it. I ran back to Carter, placed my hand behind his neck, and kissed him. There was a split second of hesitation before his arms went around me. Then he held me to him as if I was something he needed to live. When we pulled apart, he shook his head, scolding himself.
Lost that war. No hope for retreat now.
But while his words were filled with remorse, the little smirk on his face gave away that he was as happy as I was. I can't be without you, Carter, I said, using the name he'd only recently shared with me for the first time.
This is dangerous. You understand that, right? This could kill us both.
I closed my eyes and nodded, the tears falling on my cheeks. With his love or without it, either way, I was inviting death. I woke up to the sound of moans. For a second, I couldn't think of where I was. Then it came rushing back to me. The Halloween party. The caning. Carter. The room was poorly lit, and looking around, I saw it was only big enough for the cots that he and I were sprawled out on. I tried to push myself up and immediately shrieked. I wondered how long my hands would be useless.
Marley?
I turned to Carter, propping myself on my elbows. I'm here. I'm okay. I try to use my hands.
Oh, sweetheart, I'm sorry.
He sounded like he had rocks in his throat. How are you?
Alive?
He choked. He was lying on his stomach, but I could see the smile on his face.
It hurts to move at all.
Can I help you? I slowly got to my feet and peered over at him. The bottom half of his body was covered in a sheet, and I had no idea what, if anything, I could do to ease his pain. I saw a table in the corner with jars and bandages on it, as well as a piece of paper, and hobbled over to it. He hadn't signed it, but I knew Maxon's handwriting.
When you wake up, change your bandages. Use the salve in the jar. Apply it with the cotton swabs to avoid infection and try not to wrap the gauze too tight. The pills will help as well. Then rest. Do not attempt to leave this room.
Carter, I have some medicine for us. I gingerly unscrewed the cap using only the tips of my fingers. The smell of the slightly thick substance was reminiscent of aloe.
What?
He turned his face toward me. There are bandages and instructions. I looked at my wrapped hands and tried to think of how I was going to manage this.
I'll help you,
Carter offered, reading my mind. I smiled. This is going to be hard.
Absolutely,
he murmured.
This isn't exactly how I imagined you would be seeing me naked for the first time.
I couldn't fight the laugh that came out, and I fell in love all over again. In less than a day, I'd been beaten and made an 8, and was waiting to be exiled to who knew where. Still, I was laughing. What princess could have more? It was impossible to judge how much time had passed, but we didn't try to call out or knock on the door.
Have you thought about where they'll send us?
Carter asked. I was on the floor beside him, running the tips of my fingers across his short hair. If I got a choice, I'd pick someplace hot over someplace cold.
I have a feeling it will be one of the extremes, too.
I sighed. I'm scared not to have a home.
Don't be. I might be a little worthless at the moment, but I can take care of us. I even know how to build an igloo if we end up somewhere cold.
I smiled. Do you really? He nodded.
I'll build you the prettiest igloo, Marley. Everyone will be so jealous.
I kissed his head over and over. You're not worthless, by the way. It's not like... The door made a ratcheting sound, then opened. 3 people walked in wearing brown hooded cloaks, and I felt a wave of fear. Then the first person pulled off his hood, revealing himself. I gasped and leaped to my feet to embrace Maxon, forgetting again about my hands and gasping at the pain.
It will be all right,
Maxon promised as I drew back my hands.
The salve takes a few days to get everything back to normal, but Carter, even you should be walking on your own soon. You'll heal much faster than most.
Maxon turned to the two other hooded figures.
This is Juan Diego and Abril. Until today, they have worked in the palace. Now you will be trading places with them. Marley, if you and Abril will go into the corner, the gentleman and I will avert our eyes while you trade clothes. Here,
he said, handing me a cloak similar to hers.
This will help with some privacy.
I looked at Abril's timid face. Of course. We moved to one corner, and she pulled off her skirt, then helped me put it on. I slipped off my dress and handed it to her.
Carter, we're going to have to put pants back on you. We'll help you stand.
I kept my face turned, trying not to get anxious over the sounds Carter made. Thank you, I whispered to Abril. It was the prince's idea, she replied quietly. He must have spent the entire day going through records and searching for anyone who came from Panama when he found out where you were going. We sold ourselves into service at the palace to provide for our family. Today, we're going home to them. Panama. We were curious where we'd end up. It was cruel of the king to send you there on top of everything else, she murmured. What do you mean? Abril looked over her shoulder at the prince, making sure he wasn't listening. I grew up as a six there, and it wasn't pretty. Eights? They end up being killed for sport sometimes. I gaped at her in disbelief. What? Every few months, we'd find someone who'd been begging on a corner for ages dead in the middle of the road. No one knows who does it. Other eights, maybe? The rich twos and threes? Rebels? But it happens. There's a very good chance you would have died.
Now just hold on to my arm,
Maxon coaxed, and I turned to see Carter hunched into the prince, a hood already covering his head.
All right, Abril, Juan Diego, the guards should be coming to this room. Use the bandages and walk like you're hurt. I think they plan to put you on a bus and ship you off. Just keep your heads down. No one's going to look at you too closely. You're supposed to be eights. No one will care. Thank you, Your Highness,
Juan Diego said.
I never thought we'd see our mother again.
Thank you,
Maxon replied.
Your willingness to leave the palace is saving their lives. I won't forget what you've done for them.
I looked at Abril one last time.
Okay.
Maxon pulled on his hood.
Let's go.
With Carter limping and leaning into him, Maxon led us into the hall. Won't people be suspicious? I whispered.
No.
Maxon answered, checking around each corner all the same.
Lower-level staff, like kitchen workers or general cleaners, aren't supposed to show their faces upstairs. If they absolutely must come up, they're covered like this. Anyone who sees us will think we're done with the task and heading back to our rooms.
Maxon took us down a long stairwell that opened to a narrow hallway lined with doors.
In here.
We followed him into a small room. There was a bed shoved into one corner and a tiny stand next to it. It looked like a carafe of milk and some bread was waiting, and my stomach roared just from seeing food. A thin rug had been placed neatly in the middle of the floor, and a few shelves lined the door side wall.
I know it's not much, but you'll be safe here. I'm sorry I can't do better.
Carter shook his head.
How can you be apologizing to us? Our lives were supposed to end hours ago, but we're alive, together, and we have a home.
He and Maxon shared a look.
I know that what I did was technically treason, but it had nothing to do with a lack of respect for you.
I know.
Good. So when I say that no one in this kingdom will ever be as loyal to you as me, I hope you believe it.
Carter winced as he finished speaking and fell into the prince.
Let's get you to the bed.
I moved under his other shoulder, and Maxon and I laid him on his stomach. He took up most of the bed, and I knew I'd need to sleep on the rug tonight.
A nurse will come check on you in the morning,
Maxon explained.
You can have a few days of rest, and you should stay in here as much as you can during that time. In 3 or 4 days, I'll have you put on the official work orders, and someone from the kitchen will give you something to do.
I don't know what your exact jobs will be, but just do your best at whatever you're asked. I'll check on you as often as I can. For now, no one will know you're here. Not the guards, not the elite, not even your families. You will interact with a small group of people on the palace staff, and the chances of them recognizing you are slim. Still, from now on, your names are Mallory and Carson. This is the only way I can protect you. I looked up at him, thinking that if I could hand choose a husband for my best friend, it'd be him. You've done so much for us. Thank you.
I wish it was more. I'm going to try to get some of your personal items if I can. Beyond that, is there anything I can give you? If it's within reason, I promise I'll try.
One thing, Carter said tiredly. When you get a chance, can you find us a preacher? It took a second for me to understand the intention behind that request, and the moment I did, my eyes filled with happy tears.
Sorry, he added. I know that's not the most romantic proposal.
Yes, all the same, I murmured. I watched his eyes get wet, and I temporarily forgot Maxon was even in the room until he spoke up.
It'd be my pleasure. I'm not sure how long that will take, but I'll make it happen.
He pulled the medicines from upstairs out of his pocket, setting them beside the food.
Use the salve again tonight and rest as much as you can. The nurse will see to anything else tomorrow.
I nodded. I'll take care of us. Maxon backed out of the room, smiling as he went. Do you want some food, fiancé? I asked. Carter grinned.
Oh, thank you, fiancé, but I'm actually kind of tired.
All right, fiancé. Why don't you sleep for a bit?
I'd sleep better if my fiancé was with me.
And then, forgetting I'd been hungry at all, I wiggled my way onto the tiny bed, half hanging off the edge and half squashed beneath Carter. It was shocking how easily I found sleep. Part 2. I flexed my hands over and over. They had finally healed. But sometimes, when I had a long day, my palms swelled and throbbed. Even my little ring was pulled too tight tonight. I could see where it was fraying on one side and made a mental note to ask Carter for a new one tomorrow. I'd lost count of how many twine bands we'd gone through, but it meant a lot to me to have that symbol on my hand. Picking up the scraper again, I scooped the loose flour off the table and into the trash. A few other members of the kitchen staff were scrubbing floors or putting away ingredients. Everything for breakfast was prepped, and soon we could sleep. I inhaled sharply as a set of hands wrapped around my waist.
Hello, wife,
Carter said, kissing my cheek.
Are you still working?
He smelled like his job, cut grass in sunshine. I had been sure he would be stuck in the stables, somewhere he would be hidden away from the eyes of the king, just as I'd been buried in the kitchen. Instead, he was walking around with dozens of other groundskeepers, hiding in plain sight. He came in at night with the outdoors hanging on him, and for a moment, it was like I'd been outside too. I sighed. I'm almost done. After I tidy up here, I'll come to bed. He nuzzled his nose into my neck.
Don't overdo it. I could rub your hands if you want.
That'd be perfect, I crooned. I still loved my end-of-the-day hand massages, maybe more so now that they were given to me by Carter. But if my day ended well after bedtime, it was a luxury I typically went without. Sometimes my thoughts got stuck on memories of my days as a lady. How nice it had been to be adored. How proud my family was. How beautiful I felt. It was difficult to go from being constantly served to being the one constantly serving. Still, I knew things could be much, much worse. I tried to keep the smile on my face, but he saw through it.
What's wrong, Marley? You've seemed down lately,
he whispered, still holding me. I really miss my parents, especially now that Christmas is so close. I keep wondering how they're doing. If I feel this sad without them, how are they managing without me? I pressed my lips together, as if I could mash the worry out of them. And I know it's probably silly to care about this, but we won't be able to exchange gifts. What could I give you? A loaf of bread?
I'd love a loaf of bread.
I giggled at his enthusiasm. But I wouldn't even be able to use my own flour to make you one. It'd be stealing. He kissed my cheek.
True. Besides, the last time I stole something, it was pretty big, and I got more than I deserved, and I'm already happy with what I have.
You didn't steal me. I'm not a teapot.
He said. Maybe you stole me, because I distinctly remember belonging to myself once, but now I'm all yours.
I smiled. I love you.
I love you too. Don't worry. I know it's a difficult season, but this isn't forever. And we have a lot to be grateful for this year.
We do. I'm sorry I'm so down today. I just feel...
Mallory!
I turned at the sound of my new name.
Where's Mallory?
A guard asked, coming into the kitchen. He was with a girl I'd never seen before. I swallowed before answering.
Here.
Come, please.
His voice was urgent, but the fact that he said please made me less frightened than I would have been otherwise. Each day I fretted more and more that someone would tell the king Carter and I were living secretly in his home. I knew that if that ever happened, the caning would seem like a prize instead of a punishment. I kissed Carter's cheek. I'll be right back. As I passed the girl, she gripped my hand.
Thank you. I'll just wait here for you.
My forehead scrunched in confusion. Okay.
We're all counting on absolute secrecy,
the guard said as he led me down the hall. Of course, I answered, though I still didn't understand. We turned down the officer's wing, and I became even more confused. Someone of my rank shouldn't be allowed in this part of the palace. The doors were all closed except for one, where another officer was standing just outside. His face was calm, but his eyes were worried.
Just do your best, someone said from inside the room. I knew that voice.
I pulled myself around the threshold and took in the scene. America was lying on a bed, blood streaming out of her arm while her head maid, Anne, inspected the wound, and the prince and these two guards watched on. Anne, not breaking her gaze, barked orders back to the guards.
Someone get some boiling water. We should have antiseptic in the kit, but I want water too.
I'll get it, I offered. America's face perked up, and she met my gaze.
Marley.
She started crying, and I could see she was losing her battle with the pain. I'll be right back, America. Hold tight. I dashed to the kitchen, grabbing towels out of the cupboard. There was water already boiling in a pot, thank goodness, so I poured some in a pitcher.
Simmy, you're gonna want to top off this pot,
I called in a rush, moving too quickly for her to protest. Then I made my way to the spirits. The best liquor was kept close to the king, but sometimes we used brandy in recipes. I'd mastered a brandy pork chop, a chicken with brandy sauce, and a brandy whipped cream for desserts. I grabbed a bottle, hoping it would help. I knew a thing or two about pain. I came back to Anne lacing thread through a needle and America trying to control her breathing. I put the water and towels behind Anne and walked over to the bed with a bottle. For the pain, I explained, lifting America's head to help her drink. She attempted to swallow, but coughed up more than she actually drank. Try again. I sat beside her, steering clear of her injured arm, and tipped the bottle again to her lips. She did a little bit better that time. After she swallowed, she gazed up at me.
I'm so glad you're here.
My heart broke to see her look so scared, even though she was safe now. I didn't know what she'd been through, but I was going to do my best to make it better. I'll always be here for you, America. You know that. I smiled at her and brushed a lock of hair away from her forehead. What in the world were you doing? I could see the debate in her eyes about answering.
It seemed like a good idea, was all she said.
I tilted my head. America, you are full of nothing but bad ideas, I said, trying not to laugh. Great intentions, but awful ideas. She pursed her lips as if to say she knew exactly what I was talking about.
How soundproof are these walls?
Anne asked the guards. This must be their room.
Pretty good,
one answered.
Don't hear too much this deep in the palace.
Anne nodded.
Good. Okay, I need everyone in the hall. Miss Marley, she continued.
It had been so long since anyone besides Carter had used my real name that I wanted to cry. I didn't realize how much my name meant to me.
I'm going to need some space, but you can stay.
I'll keep out of your way, Anne, I promised. The boys backed into the hallway, and Anne took over. As she spoke to America and prepared to stitch her up, I couldn't help but be impressed with how calm she was. I'd always liked America's maids, especially Lucy, because she was so, so sweet. But this made me see Anne in a whole new light. It seemed unfortunate that someone who was so capable in a crisis couldn't do more than be a lady's maid. Finally, Anne began to clean out the wound, which I still couldn't identify. America screamed into the towel in her mouth, and though I hated to do it, I knew I had to pin her down to keep her still. I climbed on top of her, focusing most of my effort on keeping her one arm straight.
"Thank you," Anne mumbled, pulling out a tiny black speck with some tweezers.
Was that dirt? Pavement? Thank goodness Anne was thorough. The air alone could leave America with a nasty infection, but it was clear that Anne wasn't going to let that happen.
America screamed again, and I shushed her.
"It'll be over soon, America," I said, thinking of the things Maxon had told me before I was caned and the words Carter had spoken as it was happening.
"Think of something happy. Think about your family."
I could see she was trying, but it clearly wasn't working. She was in too much pain. So I gave her more brandy and continued to give her sips until Anne was finished. When it was all over, I wondered if America would even remember any of this. After Anne wrapped the wound in a bandage, she and I stood back and watched America sing a children's Christmas song while drawing imaginary pictures on the wall with her finger. Anne and I grinned at her sloppy movements.
"Does anyone know where the puppies even are?" America asked. "Why are they so far away?"
We covered our mouths, laughing so hard we were crying. The danger had passed. America was taken care of, and in her head, there was a puppy emergency.
"Let's maybe keep this to ourselves," Anne suggested.
"Yes, I think so," I sighed.
"What do you think happened to her?"
Anne tensed up. "I can't begin to even guess what they were doing, but I can tell you for sure that was a gunshot wound."
"Gunshot?"
I exclaimed. Anne nodded.
"A few inches to the left, and she could have died."
I looked down at America, who was now poking her cheeks with her fingers, seemingly just so she could see how it felt.
"Thank goodness she's all right. Even if she wasn't my lady, I think I'd still want her to be princess. I don't know what I'd have done if we lost her."
Anne spoke not simply as a servant, but as a subject. I knew exactly what she meant. I nodded. "I'm glad she had you tonight. I'll go get the boys to take her back to her room." I crouched beside America.
"Hey, I'm going now, but you try not to break yourself again, all right?"
She nodded sluggishly.
"Yes, ma'am."
She definitely wouldn't remember this. The guard who had come for me was standing at the end of the hall, keeping watch. The other guard was sitting on the floor just outside the room, fidgeting with his hands while Maxon paced.
"Well?"
the prince asked.
"She's doing better. Anne took care of everything, and America is, well, she had a lot of the brandy, so she's a little out of it."
The lyrics of her Christmas song trilled through my head, and I giggled.
"You can go in now."
The guard on the floor was up in a flash, Maxon right behind him. I wanted to stop them, ask questions, but now probably wasn't the time. I wearily walked back to our room, crashing now that the adrenaline had faded. As I approached, I saw Carter sitting in the hall outside our door.
"Oh, you didn't have to wait up for me," I said quietly, hoping not to disturb anyone else.
"I put her on our bed," he said, "so I decided I'd wait out here."
"Put who on our bed?"
"The girl from the kitchen, the one who was with the guard."
"Oh, right." I sat next to him. "What did she want with me?"
"It sounds like you're training her. Her name is Paige, and based on the story she just told me, tonight was a really interesting night."
"What do you mean?"
He lowered his voice even further.
"She was a prostitute. She said America found her and brought her here. So the prince and America were outside of the palace tonight. Do you have any idea why?"
I shook my head. "All I know is I was just helping Anne stitch up America's gunshot wound."
Carter's shocked expression mirrored my own.
"What could they have done to put themselves in such danger?"
I yawned.
"I don't know, but I have a feeling it was an effort to do good.
While running into prostitutes and shootouts didn't sound entirely wholesome, if there was one thing I knew about Maxon, it was that he always strove to do what was right.
Come on, Carter said. You can sleep next to Paige, and I'll sleep on the floor.
Nope. Where you go, I go, I replied. I needed to be beside him tonight. So much was going through my head, and I knew he was my only safe place. I remembered thinking America was foolish for being upset with Maxon over my caning, but it made sense now. Even though he had my utmost respect, I couldn't help feeling a little angry with him for letting her get hurt. For the first time, I was able to see my caning through her eyes. I knew then just how much I loved her and how much she must love me. If she felt half the worry I felt tonight, it was more than enough. It'd been a week and a half, and nothing felt quite normal yet. Everywhere I went, all the conversations still revolved around the attack. I was one of the lucky few. While others were ruthlessly murdered throughout the palace, Carter and I were safely tucked away in our room. He had been outside tending to the grounds when he heard gunshots, and the instant he realized what was happening, he raced into the kitchen and grabbed me, and we ran to our room. I helped him push our bed against the door, and we lay on it, adding to the weight. I trembled in his arms as the hours passed, terrified the rebels would find us and wondering if there was any way they would show us mercy. I kept asking Carter if we should have tried to escape from the palace grounds, but he was insistent that we were safer staying put.
You didn't see what I saw, Marley. I don't think we would have made it.
So we'd waited, straining to hear the sounds of enemies and relieved when friends finally came down the hall, knocking on doors. It was a strange thing to think about, but when we'd gone into that room, Clarkson was the king, and when we came out, it was Maxon. I hadn't been alive the last time the crown was handed over to a new king. This seemed like such a natural change for the country, maybe because I'd always been happy to follow Maxon anyway. And of course, the work Carter and I needed to do around the palace didn't slow, so there wasn't much time to stop and think about a new ruler. I was preparing lunch when a guard came into the kitchen and called my new name. The last time an escort came for me, America had been bleeding, so I was instantly on edge. And I wasn't sure what it meant that Carter was already standing next to the guard, covered in sweat from being outside. "Do you know what this is about?" I whispered to Carter as the guard took us upstairs.
"No, I can't imagine we're in trouble for anything, but the formality of being escorted by a guard is off-putting."
I laced my hand in his, my wedding band twisting a bit in the process and lodging the knot between our fingers. The guard led us to the throne room, which was typically reserved for greeting guests or special ceremonies related to the crown. Maxon was sitting at the far end of the room, his crown affixed on his head. He looked so wise. My heart swelled to see America sitting on a smaller throne to his right, her hands folded in her lap. There was no crown for her yet. That would come on her wedding day. But she wore a comb in her hair that looked like a sunburst, and she was already so queenly. Off to one side, a group of advisors sat at a table, reviewing stacks of papers and furiously scribbling notes. We followed the guard down a blue carpet. He stopped right before King Maxon and bowed, then stepped aside, leaving Carter and me facing the thrones. Carter quickly dipped his head.
"Your Majesty."
I followed with a curtsy.
"Carter and Marley Woodwork,"
he began with a smile. My heart wanted to burst from hearing my full, true married name.
"In light of your service to the crown, I, your king, am taking the liberty of undoing past punishments inflicted upon you."
Carter and I peeked at each other, unsure of what this meant.
"Of course, your physical punishment cannot be changed, but other stipulations may. Am I correct that you were both sentenced to be eights?"
It was bizarre to hear him speak like this, but I suppose there were rules to follow. Carter spoke for both of us.
"Yes, Your Majesty." "And is it also correct that you have been living in the palace doing the work of sixes for the past 2 months?"
"Yes, Your Majesty."
"Is it also true that you, Mrs. Woodwork, served the future queen when she was physically unwell?"
I smiled at America. "Yes, Your Majesty."
"Is it also true that you, Mr. Woodwork, have loved and cherished Mrs. Woodwork, a former elite, and therefore precious daughter of Ilea, giving her the best she can possibly have under your circumstances?"
Carter looked down. It was as if I could see him questioning whether he'd given me enough. I piped up again. Yes, Your Majesty. I watched my husband as he blinked back tears. He was the one who told me that the life we had now wasn't forever, the one who encouraged me when the days were too long. How could he ever think he wasn't enough?
In accordance with your service, I, King Maxon Shreve, am relieving you of your caste assignments. You are no longer eights. Carter and Marley Woodwork, you are the first citizens in Alea to be castless.
I squinted at him. Castless, Your Majesty? I chanced to look at America and saw her beaming at me, tears glistening in her eyes.
Correct. You are now at liberty to make two choices. First, you must decide whether you would like to continue to call the palace your home. Second, you can tell me what profession you would like to have. Whatever you decide, my fiancé and I will happily provide you with lodging and assistance. But even after that, you will still have no caste. You will simply be yourselves.
I turned to Carter, completely gobsmacked.
What do you think?
He asked. We owe him everything.
Agreed.
Carter drew himself up and turned to Maxon.
Your Majesty, my wife and I would be happy to stay in your home and serve you. I can't speak for her, but I love my position as a groundskeeper. I'm happy to work outside, and I would do that for as long as I'm able. If the head position ever opens, I'd like to be considered for it, but I'm otherwise content.
Maxon nodded.
Very well. And Mrs. Woodwork?
I looked at America. If the future queen would have me, I'd love to be one of her ladies in waiting. America bounced in her seat a little and pulled her hands up to her heart. Maxon looked at her as if she was the most adorable thing on the planet.
You might be able to tell that's what she was hoping for.
He cleared his throat and sat up straighter, calling out to the men at the table.
Let it be recorded that Carter and Marley Woodwork have been forgiven of their past crimes and now live under the protection of the palace. Let it further say that they have no caste and are above any such segregation. So recorded,
one man shouted back. As soon as he had finished speaking, Maxon stood and took off his crown, while America positively leaped out of her seat and ran down to throw her arms around me. I hoped you would stay, she sang. I can't do this without you. Are you kidding? How lucky am I to serve the queen? Maxon joined us and gave Carter a firm handshake.
Are you sure about the groundskeeping? You could go back to guarding or even be an advisor if you like. I'm sure. I've never had a head for that kind of thing. I was always good with my hands, and that kind of work makes me happy. All right,
Maxon said.
If you ever change your mind, let me know.
Carter nodded, wrapping an arm around me. Oh, America galloped back to her throne. I almost forgot. Picking up a small box, she returned to us, beaming. What's that? I asked. She smiled at Maxon. I'd promised you I'd be at your wedding, and I wasn't. And even though it's a little late, I thought I could make up for it with a little present. America held out the box to us, and I bit my lip in anticipation. All the things I thought I'd have at my wedding, a beautiful dress, a fantastic party, a room full of flowers, had been missing. The only thing I did have on that day was an absolutely perfect groom, and I was happy enough about that to let everything else pass. Still, it was nice to receive a gift. It made things feel real. I cracked open the box, and resting inside were two simple, beautiful gold bands. I covered my mouth. America!
We did our best at guessing your sizes,
Maxon said.
And if you'd prefer a different metal, we'd be happy to exchange them.
I think your strings are sweet, America said. I hope you put the ones you're wearing now away somewhere and keep them forever. But we thought you deserved something a bit more permanent. I stared at them, not able to believe they were real. It was funny. They were such small things, but they were absolutely priceless. I was close to tears with joy. Carter took the rings out of my hand and handed them to Maxon, removing the smaller one from the box.
Let's see how it looks.
He slowly rolled my string down my finger, holding onto it as he slid the gold one on in its place. A little loose, I said, fiddling with it, but it's perfect. Excited, I reached for Carter's ring, and he tugged off his old one, keeping it with mine. His fit wonderfully, and I sat my hand on top of his, fanning out my fingers. "This is too much," I said. "It's too many good things in one day." America came up behind me and wrapped her arms around me. "I have a feeling lots of good things are coming." I hugged her as Carter went to shake Maxon's hand again. "I'm so glad to have you back," I whispered. "Me too." "And you'll need someone to stop you from going overboard," I teased.
"Are you kidding? I need an army of people to stop me from going overboard."
I giggled. "I'll never be able to thank you enough. You know that, right? I'll always be here for you."
"Then that will be thanks enough."
This is Arielle Delisle. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Favorite by Kira Cass. This program was produced by Elgin Productions. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2015 by Kira Cass. Production copyright 2015 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.